I've been all across this country.
Okie dokie, folks, and welcome to this week's episode of Monday Night Shaw. I am Kyle Shaw, a.k.a. The Canadian Goose. And on the show today with me is a very interesting cat, someone who has not necessarily taken to the ring in tights and, you know, kick pads or whatnot, but a fellow that is very well known around Calgary for helping out with the Alberta Wrestling Academy, keeping the guys on track, keeping everybody feeling happy and motivated. It is Dave Matthew Boddy. Dave, wow. How are you, bud?
I am fantastic. First, I gotta say, I appreciate you saying my name correctly after asking me.
That's why I asked you about it off air before the show.
it's so like even English teachers in high school, junior high would always get it wrong as well. So it's like, just, it's a very.
I looked at it and I was like, okay, is it Boddy or Bodhi or Brody or, yeah. So, welcome to the show, bud.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Yeah, no problem. I've recently had a few other folks from the Alberta Wrestling Academy on the show. Of course, Vinny Fever was on, and then I had Jordan Aries. So
nice. I'm guessing they're both stellar guests.
Yeah, they were both great guests, and they at least Vinny for sure definitely talked about what you do there. But I was hoping that maybe you could give us a little bit more of a clear idea from your
Most
own
definitely.
Words.
So. I befriended Otto. Well, we met officially again at a
former. Yeah, I'm not sure if Otto has friends. Just
yeah, more like acquaintances that he talks to. We met and we actually conversed further and realized that I actually met him, initially 20 years ago when my buddy Kenny and Steve Rivers would wrestle with Can-Am. I would always be a little blonde kid backstage, and he's like, okay, I remember that. I'm like, yeah, I was always backstage Stampede and Can-Am and Canadian Rocky Mountain Wrestling. So we met, and he heard my story about what I've been doing with the last 8 to 10 years. I've been doing a lot of life coaching. And
was this, hold on, just before we continue, yep. This Kenny Johnson you're talking about?
That's correct, yeah, Primetime.
Okay, solid. I know him. I've wrestled him a few times.
Oh, He's my childhood best friend. We met when I was 4 and a half, I believe, around there. And as a result of meeting Kenny, I would be backstage Stampede Wrestling, hanging out at his gym, and that's where I befriended Owen Hart and David Boy Smith Tyson Kidd and David Boy Smith Jr. and Teddy. So basically, growing up with those guys, I became even close with Matthew Annis, who unfortunately passed away in '96 due to fleshing disease.
Is that Ted Hart's brother, right?
That's correct. Yeah, okay. His younger brother.
Yeah. So, condolences about your friend. I know it was a long time ago.
It's definitely something that you don't recover from. Like people always say, eventually you recover from death, but you really don't. Like it always lingers with you with the pain and the missing them. You just learn how to adapt. And basically my biggest advice for people who are dealing with that is live through memories. Just constantly go to those memories and smile and laugh and whatever. But when Matthew died, I stopped going to BJ's gym for a couple of years because it just didn't feel the same. And the next time I went back there was in 2005 when I started training with Tyson for about a month and a half. And then that's when my story basically developed. So I started training in 2005 with Monster Pro Wrestling in Edmonton, Alberta with Massive Damage. Tom McDonald was also there. Bobby Sharp was there. It was a two-day seminar. I suffered a severe neck injury from taking an arm drag, and the canvas in the ring had a tear in it.
Oh, no.
And when I went to go do a roll-through with the arm drag, my foot got caught in the chair, and I landed right on the side of my neck with my entire body weight. So that wasn't fun.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
I've taken some gnarly arm drags a couple of times, you know, and a lot of times it's on me because I'm not super graceful sometimes, but never have I landed on my neck off an arm drag. That must be horrible. Like, I've hit my ankle a few times, and that's really a bummer, but my neck, Lord.
Yeah, to be honest, it could have been a lot worse with the ankle because my ankle stayed within the hole. And I couldn't torque over, so I went right on my neck in an L-shape. And, you know, with adrenaline rush, you don't feel it, but I felt it on the way home on the Greyhound bus. And I was like, okay, I'll take a couple weeks off. So I did. And then I started training with Bad News Allen. And in that class was Gama Singh Jr. and Jinder Mahal.
Oh, wow.
And that was about, I think it was a 3-month training session that we did with Bad News. And that was an experience and a half, because Bad News is, he's one of the most intimidating individuals, but one of the most kind and compassionate as well.
Yeah, I heard he called out Andre the Giant for a fight one time on a bus.
Yeah, he did. And that's not a surprise. Bad News was one of those individuals that when you met him in gimmick, you met him out of gimmick. Like, it just, he is so intimidating.
Yeah, yeah. Seems one like of the most. Sure.
I remember one class we found out that he had a huge issue with short workers or smaller workers hitting larger workers in the corner with a clothesline. He never understood the psychology of it. So I think it was Dusty Adonis and I, we were having just a random spar match, and I called for the reversal to the corner, and I said, you hit me with the clothesline because you're smaller than me, and we'll see how Bad News, you know, if he gets triggered or not. And he got triggered. He did
not.
He did not like it. He's like, that's a stupid psychology. You don't do that. Like, he always complained about Christopher Daniels using the angel wings finisher.
Yeah.
So he was very psychological driven. He was very respectful of kayfabe and the industry. Like, that was my favorite. Well, I'll tell you,
at my wrestling school, we definitely do not purposely try to get the coaches hot.
It just, when you knew Bad News' joking side, and I'm like, okay, I'm like, I have to test his temperament here, because I tested Jason the Terribles when Ekene and Rocky Mountain, when I was like really young. I challenged him in the ring. He threw me in the ring and started bumping around and suplexing and power slam. So I was just that annoying little blonde kid that was backstage, constantly aggravating the wrestlers. And Bad News. He realized it was a rib, so he wasn't like legit angry. He was just more like annoyed. And then Bad News taught me a lot about like receipts and. Because during his training, I suffered 2 concussions my 15 total. So that's where my story starts, is I went into professional wrestling in 2005 with 9 concussions, and I had shoulder surgery because I had over 100-plus dislocations on my right shoulder from football.
Jesus.
I had back injuries. I had neck injuries. So I went in knowing that there was a high potential that my career would be cut short. However, I wasn't prepared for how it was cut short. So I had 2 concussions in one night training with Bad News. I took a heart attack. The guy stiffed me on the clothesline. Oh. So his palm struck my temple. Which immediately gave me a concussion. But with adrenaline rush, I said, I'm good. So the first thing I always tell people is with concussions is, one of the symptoms could be you are not in a position to make decisions for yourself because you're delusional, you're suffering from dizziness or what have you. So
yeah,
I should not have been trusted to say I was okay, but I said I was okay, and then we called for a DDT spot and I spiked myself because I was so out of it. And then from what I was told, when I took the DDT spot, I was unconscious for about a minute.
Oh no.
And my dad's like, yeah, you're done for a couple weeks. So I took a couple weeks off, went back. Another concussion I had was I went to go do a senton over the top rope, flipping senton, just to try it out on the crash pad.
Yeah.
But I didn't let go of the top rope.
Oh no.
Soon enough. So I don't know if you saw the recent Keith Lee spot where on Raw he would go do a diving senton.
I'm just imagining you caught yourself, the ropes pulled you back in, and you probably nailed the back of your head on the ring apron on the way out.
I went straight down, basically a pile driver to myself on the ring apron.
Oh no.
I have no recollection of it. My best friend, Jesse, was like, this is what happened. And I was like, sure, if you say that happened, I'll believe it. And then I took about a month off then. And then I started training with Tyson at BJ's gym because I just put a deposit down for Lance Storm School to go train with him. So I was like, you know what? It's going to be another 3 months before Lance's next school session opens. So I figured I would just train with Tyson to avoid ring rust.
Okay.
During that, you know, Natty came by and Davey Boy Jr. came by that gave us some tips, and Natty was frustrated because I can't do drop kits. no matter how much she tried to teach me, I could never do them. Even with Matthew when I was younger, I could never do them. I don't know why.
They're challenging, man. Like, I have done drop kicks like in training, but like it took me a long time before I'd even like really like even do it in training, because I just was like, I'm jumping up, drop kicking people in the thigh, you know, like. But anyway, yeah, they are challenging. I did get it to a point where I actually did it in a match against Tony Machete recently, and I was a little low, but not too low, and he got his chest down there, so everything was good. But yeah, no, drop kicks are definitely like a very challenging thing to do. Like, you got to think about it. Like, you have to throw your whole body weight up in the air and then try and put your feet into a guy's face or chest, you know? Like,
yep.
It's hard.
You have to appreciate a great drop kick when you see a great drop kick.
Yeah, because I've always like the secret for me is to aim like a foot above where you want to hit, you know? So like if I'm trying to get somebody in the chest, I'm like aiming for above their head, you know? And then yeah, just make sure you put your hand up so I don't kick you in the face by accident.
Right?
Yeah. Like
communication. But like, so I started training with Tyson, and then, so on my 20th birthday, which was January 22nd, 2006, so I was 20, I was waiting for my ex-wife just by a church in Marlboro here in Calgary. Marlboro Mall has a church behind it.
All right.
And I was waiting outside there, just waiting for her, and then a group of drunk individuals walked by with a shovel, and I was like, okay, it's like 11:30 p.m. at night. I'm like, this is kind of weird, but it's Marlboro location. It's Forest Lawn, basically, if you want to be like technical with it.
Isn't Marlboro, so, like, I've been to that Marlboro area, I'm pretty sure, and it's a bit sketchy.
Oh, yeah. It's I grew up there, and I also did security there for 4 years, and it's definitely a neighborhood that gives you a lot of street smarts. And so that's why when I saw these individuals walking past me, I had that instinctual feeling of, okay, this isn't good because they have a shovel. What I did not know beforehand was they were actually smashing vehicles with the shovel. Oh. I didn't know that. So I saw them just after they smashed two vehicles, because my ex-wife was in the parking lot behind. I was in the front street because my intelligence was, I'm going to wait for you where it's well lit. And she was in the parking lot. So we were close to each other. We just didn't realize it. So they kept walking past me. And then shortly they were gone. But then two came back. So two of the three came back towards me with a shovel still. However, they also had an A&W large glass mug. And I was like, oh, shoot. This is going to go somewhere where I don't want to go. And at this time, I was doing security. But I didn't really have any self-defense training. So I didn't really have any confidence of how to deal with this. So they
run away. That's what, like, I would do.
That was my initial thought, was run away, but where was I going to run to?
That's fair.
Like, I had no relatives or
these
friends.
These guys are all fucking clearly hopped up on root beer anyway. Oh, they'll catch you.
Exactly. So I was like, all right, I'll just see what the hell they want. Maybe I'll have the nice guy approach. And they came up to me, and from there on, it's very puzzly because...
Oh.
The only thing I remember is I got hit in the head with a shovel 3 times.
Oh, no.
And then I got smoked in the face with the A&W glass mug. And then after that, it's all puzzle pieces. And I remember going to the hospital, and they're like, okay, this is your 12th severe concussion. You are, because before that, I had 3 security concussions. Sorry, I had 3 more security concussions after this. Then I had the 3 concussions in wrestling before this happened.
Oh.
And then I had 3 concussions in football, and then other concussions and stupid other incidents like falling and being pushed and stuff and bullying. But
yeah.
So when I got hit out of the shovel 3 times, they're like, you are done wrestling. You can't do it no more. Like, the next concussion you get could be a vegetative state. It could be very serious.
Oh.
So I had to call. I had the message. This is how long ago this happened. I had the message Tyson and Michael Richard Blaze, but back then he was known as Chucky. I had a message them both, and like, okay, this is what's happening. I can't wrestle no more.
Oh.
And they're like, okay. So that's why I never had a chance to get in the ring in front of a crowd or refereeing, because I was training for a year. Mm-hmm. And then that happened, and I was like, this sucks. So my last time in the ring was January 17th, 2006 training. That was my last day training. And from there on, it was a matter of figuring out where I could go, what to do. So I started doing security work. I did that for 8 years. I started studying self-defense for 8 years. I studied PPCT, which is pressure point control tactics. which is the number one training for police in North America. Then I studied jiu-jitsu. Then I studied ranger training. So I started taking a lot of passion in submissions and grappling and self-defense. So I did that for 8 years, suffered more concussions. Oh. And then in 2011, I had my 15th concussion, my final one so far, and I was in rehab for 5 months, the same rehab that Bret Hart was in when he had a stroke. Oh. And I couldn't walk. I couldn't balance. I was diagnosed with what's called dysthymia, which is prolonged, possibly permanent depression. I was diagnosed with permanent PCS, which is permanent post-concussion syndrome. And then I was diagnosed with severe anxiety. So since then, since 2011, I've been trying to recover through that. And I realized that even though I was forced out of the wrestling industry, that I still had a strong link to it via passion. But I couldn't really figure out how to get into it, right?
From what you've told me, you trained for what, like over a year, right?
Yeah. I trained for a year, and then, but then before that, I grew up around Kenny and Steve Rivers.
Yeah,
and
just terrible, like, chilling with the Bulldog and Owen. And
yeah, so many memories. Like, I remember Owen Hart put me in a sharpshooter at BJ's gym and made me call him Uncle. So it's like, I had so much memories from wrestling, and I remember exactly when it happened. It was 1991. Steve Rivers and Kenny were working at a WWF live event that was being taped to appear later on. I believe it was August it premiered.
Okay.
And it was Steve's debut. He wasn't known as Steve Rivers, he was known as Steve May at the time. And he did his debut, and on that show here in Calgary, the Saddledome, was Ultimate Warrior, Hulk Hogan, Macho Man, Ted DiBiase, and numerous others.
Is this where Rivers wrestled against Iron Sheik?
I believe so, yes. This is the one.
Yeah, if anybody is interested, I know he posted it a while ago on his personal Facebook page, but go check that out. I mean, I cannot imagine what that must have been like for him. Like, it's his first match, from what I heard. It was his first,
that's correct,
like, actual match in front of people. B, it's against the Iron Sheik, who legit is probably, like, one of the more experienced guys on that roster at that time. So, like, it's not like they're going to go out there and have, like, a stinker. But mind you, the athletic expectations at that time are also probably, like, you know, a lot less intense. But still, it's like you're in front of thousands of people in your first match for the WWE and the Cal. Like, that's insane. Like,
I remember that was the moment where I said, this is what I want to do. Like, yeah. When I saw Ultimate Warrior live and Hogan and Savage, and then seeing Steve in the ring, I was like, Dad, this is the moment. So from then on, it became obsession. Like, everything I did was wrestling, video games. When I was reading, learning how to read in school, I struggled in school because of my ADHD. Yeah. But where I excelled at reading was reading wrestling magazines. Like, that's where my dad's like, all right, you don't want to read English books in school, so I'll get you wrestling magazines. And that's where I learned how to read and was able to, like, actually learn the language and excel at it. And
well, that's a thing, like, man. Like, I've heard, what's his name, Kevin Owens say on interviews many times that he learned English from listening to Jim Ross call matches.
Right? Like, it's just... And so that's where it all started for me, was 1991 and seeing it live and then attending the shows and meeting Jericho and Taker and just meeting so many different people and having those experiences. I just grew up and was like, this is what I wanted to do. However, I didn't prepare for the injuries that I would have from that moment until 2005 when I would start training. Like,
I got to say, man, I have a lot of sympathy for you. Like, that the whole thing is very harrowing, and I sure hope that those perpetrators ended up getting caught or whatnot. I can't imagine, dude. Like, I've been injured and it sucks, but I've never, you know, it's never been like, oh, you'll never wrestle again or anything like that. You know what I mean?
Well, and it brings up the conversation of Daniel Bryan, right? Where he had his concussion, he was having seizures, and he wasn't being cleared for, I think it was 3 years he wasn't cleared for. I had the same mentality of that in 2014 when I started to do some work with Hart Legacy Wrestling. I was like, maybe I can slowly get back in the ring. Because when you have something taken away from you, there's no closure, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I want closure. I want to be able to say I'm done myself. And I was like, okay, I'll go hit the ring, take some bumps and see how I feel. And I felt great. But I was like, but what if I get clotheslined and I get potatoed? Or what if I get stiffed? Or what if something happens and I have my 16th concussion and it's worse than my previous 15?
Yeah.
So I was like, I could never risk it. And I'm still young, but I was like, no. And then I started doing some more thing, and I was like, there's so much opportunity in professional wrestling. There's coaching, there's booking, there's promoting. Like, there's so much other stuff that I could be doing.
Like, that's why I asked if you had ever refereed before we got on the air here, is because I just assumed that they would have put you in a different role. I wasn't sure, though, because I knew you had a history with, like, some bad concussions, so I wasn't sure how physical you were able to get. So it sounds to me like you not reffing is just a happenstance thing, and it's not because you're physically unable to. It's just not an opportunity you've been afforded yet.
I've been asked, and I politely declined because I knew getting into that ring would be mentally draining.
Oh shit, he would fire up and just beat up the guys, start shooting on the mat in the
match. Like, I'm just like, I know what would happen. I'd be like, that trigger, like, that passion would be triggered again.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, it's like Daniel Bryan, how they said that he should become a trainer. And he's like, I don't want to do that. It's like, it just teases me, right? So that's exactly why I said no to it.
Okay.
But I was also offered, you know, Bruce Hart and I were talking for a while about him and I doing some work together on podcasting and, you know, booking stuff, because I love character creation and storylines and all that stuff. There's a lot of things that I was in talks with doing, but it all came down to, would it trigger me and would it actually make me more sad being around the industry and not being able to get in the ring again? Because it took me 14 years to finally say, you know what, I accept this, I'm done.
Yeah.
Like, it took me 14 years. Like, I remember after I talked to Tyson and I told him I couldn't wrestle no more, shortly thereafter, him, Davey Boy Jr., and Natty all signed WWE.
Wow.
And I was like, I was so proud of them, but at the same time, it's like, that could have been me had I not been jumped. Or that could be me had I taken better care of myself. But at the same time, though, when I had my concussions, there was a lot of research, but there wasn't a lot of understanding to prolonged issues. Like, my recovery plan for my 14 previous concussions before my 15th was, here's some Advil, go relax. And I was like, doctor, I'm experiencing suicidal thoughts. I'm experiencing severe depression. I'm hallucinating.
Yeah.
I have emotional behaviors. When Benoit happened, I was showing the same symptoms of Benoit, where I was throwing a couch through a wall. I punched walls, but I have no recollection of doing it until I saw the aftermath. And my ex-wife's like, Dave, you need help. So in March of 2011, when I had my 15th concussion, thankfully, WCB is like, Dave, there's a pattern here. We need to send you get help. And so I was able to go to rehab, and they're like, I remember my psychologist, the first time we met, I told her my story, and she's like, I have no idea how you're still alive right now. Jeez. Because I was so depressed, and so I was battling suicidal ideation for so long that I remember when I was in rehab in 2011, I did try to commit suicide, and the only thing that saved me was the visualization of my son laughing. Like, I remember just having a vision of him laughing, and I was like, you know what? That's my new purpose. I had a son in 2008, so I stopped wrestling in 2006, and then my son was born in 2008, and I was like, this is my new purpose now. I'm a father. So I tell people all the time that becoming a father saved my life because it gave me purpose. Because before that, I chased wrestling for 16 years. Like, it was my number one dream. I had no plan B. I had no plan C. It was just wrestling. And then when I lost it, I was like, I have nothing.
Yeah.
And then my son came, and I was like, okay. But then I started doing security, like I said, and I started getting more concussions there. I got tested for HIV twice. I got slashed with a knife. I had guns pulled on me. This is mostly from Mara Mall, by the way.
I told you, that place is sketchy.
When you came, my very first shift in Marlboro, my very first shift, I noticed that their back hallway doors were held open by plunger tops. And I'm like, what the heck? This is a bad omen, how they are holding their doors open by using plunger tops.
Yeah, that sounds weird. And then
it was very weird. And then the second day in, we arrested a pedophile who was had a history. Then we had a person get stabbed and had HIV positive. And I was like, what? Where am I working? I'm like, what am I dealing with? So I started taking it very seriously, and I said, you know what? Maybe my new passion is being security as a manager. So I did that. But then when I had my 15th concussion, I had to retire from security as well, because I just could not take any more chances. And I was like, okay, so I lost wrestling. Now I lost my security passion. Where do I go now? And that's where I accidentally became a public speaker and a life coach. It just out of nowhere became a possibility where I was asked, hey, Dave, can you come to a school to 1,000 kids and share your story with bullying and depression and concussions? And I was like, sure, I can do that. And I just fell in love with it.
Solid. So for the last year, can you just get into that for a little bit? Like, how did that opportunity come around, and when was the first time you ever did a presentation?
Okay, so I can't remember the exact date, but I remember it was 2012. My friend Sunday Amani was a really well-known plus-size model and speaker, and she was with a program called We Can Rise Up. So she messaged me saying, hey, I need a second speaker. We're going to talk about bullying and confidence and whatnot, so can you come? And I was like, at first I was petrified because I've always had a public speaking fear.
Yeah.
And I was like, sure, you know what? I got to do this. So I did it. It was an 8-hour presentation to all the school grades, which was elementary to junior high. And I was focused on the wrestling stories, and I knew it'd be engaging. And I focused on comics. And then I just was like, oh my God, that was a huge adrenaline rush. Like I was entertaining people, not in the ring, which was my initial dream, but I was doing it in a different aspect that was very just positive.
Yeah.
And obviously less risk. So I would do that. I spoke at a couple of schools. I spoke at a couple of events. I spoke at a couple of RCW shows. And then I spoke with Tyson Kidd at his sister's old elementary school, Belfast. So me and Tyson spoke there. And that was the last time I saw Tyson. So that was a lot of fun speaking with him.
Yeah.
You know, this was when he was injured.
Oh.
So he figured this is when he, it was something to do with his leg. I can't remember if it was a torn MCL or a torn ACL.
But no, he was not, off. Not his neck then.
No, this was his previous one.
Okay.
So that was awesome to see Tyson again. And then I started producing a Shaw television series. I did that for 2 seasons, so 2 years.
I didn't know that you were into that.
Yeah, I did that. And that's why when you said you're having technology issues, I'm like, dude, I've been there. I get it. Like the first season that we did the show for was called Record to Edit.
Yeah.
So it was, we recorded, edited, and then post it. And the second season was the most challenging one because we went live, and that is a whole new universe because people are late, people are running behind. Like, it's just so much stuff can happen.
I can imagine that it's not only just like a scheduling issue, but like one of the things that I've done live podcasts. I just recently did one with the Dad Bod Squad. Go check that out. It's also here on Backbreaker Media Network. It was fun. We actually chatted for a long time, but it was a live thing. And anytime I do one live, I get nervous because I'm always worried I'm going to say something I shouldn't or put my foot in my mouth, you know? And here we have the benefit of editing where I can just go back and be like, oh, yeah, delete that part where I said that boneheaded thing, you know? And I send it off to Mike, the ref, the head chief here at the Backbreaker Media Network. And he takes care of everything, editing-wise and whatnot. So you mentioned you have a podcast to me.
Correct.
What is your podcast called? Where does it air? And what is it about?
For sure. I actually have two. I have one launching next month as well on Spotify. But the one that we're doing right now is myself, my best friends Jesse, and my other best friend Ben, where every Monday night we review a WCW or ECW pay-per-view in chronological order.
Oh,
so
solid.
To make that simple, we start off episode 1 in Starrcade 1983, and then we just go up based on how they were shown on TV.
Yeah.
And so it's definitely a fun process. It's called Squared Circle Rewind Podcast. It's on Spotify and numerous other platforms, and we do it every Monday night. So our next pay-per-view we're reviewing, which is tomorrow night Monday night.
I was going to ask, how far have you gotten?
Yeah, we're at Super Brawl 8.
Oh, okay. Right, so what year is that?
So we're in 1998.
Okay, so wow, so, you've covered like over 10 years then. Almost
20. Yeah, we have 154 episodes right now that are live. So a lot of content, and a lot of fun. But before I go on, I wanted to share that when I started doing the production for Shaw TV series, that's where I actually met Steel Panther, Cameron.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I actually got him as one of the guests for one of our shows for the pilot of season 2, which was about bullying, and he was on there. And that's when I met him, and I found out he had a huge passion for professional wrestling, and that was his goal.
Yeah.
So I helped him get into contact with Bruce, which just launched Heart Bros University again in Calgary at Knuckles MMA. So that's, it's just funny how, even though I'm not part of the industry, I still was somewhat assisting those in it.
Yeah. And I mean, like, honestly, like, if anyone does want to get into the industry, like, one of the best ways you can do that is to just, like, go and help out at shows, you know, offer to show up and set up the ring and move chairs around and put up posters for the next show. Like, that kind of stuff, that promoters really, really, like, need that help. And it's a good way to get yourself in the door if you're willing to work hard and, you know, you don't, like I say, walk around putting your foot in your mouth or whatever, you know?
No, most definitely. I always tell people all the time that this is definitely a service industry where you got to put the work in to get the respect and get the time to shine. And Cameron Steel Panther has done that. Like, mm-hmm. he's done so well after helping him get to Heart Bros University. And it's just, it's very rare that you find someone that has the passion before they start wrestling and then has the passion while they started and they keep it, because it's not an easy thing to get in that ring and take some bumps. Like, it's definitely physically challenging.
Yeah, it hurts. Like, that's the thing about wrestling. Everybody's like, oh, it's fake, it's phony. It's like, okay, well, you know, doesn't feel fake or phony. You know?
Well, it's I always tell, like, people that tell me all the time, like, I remember when I was training with Tyson, I had a couple of kids that wanted to judge it, and I just told them, like, here's the address to BJ's gym, come down to our training session and get in the ring. Mm-hmm. I'm like, sign the waiver, and I'll, you know, and we'll slam you around a little bit. They never showed up.
Yeah.
So I was telling people, I'm like, there's a difference between fake and predetermined.
Yeah.
I was like, fake to me means that when I'm going to give a body slam or take one, you know, a stunt double comes in and does it for me.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's not the case here, guys. Like, if the spot is a superplex, you're taking the superplex. Like, you don't have a stunt double coming in for you. So when people say it's fake, it's like, you don't understand the terminology that you're using, do you?
Yeah. No, I think it's a silly thing to say, too, just because, like, you can't try and say, okay, wrestling's not entertaining because it's fake, because then look at every other form of entertainment that you, like, guess what? Your Mario Brothers that you're playing on Switch, it's fake. You know, Captain America that you watched in the movie theater, you know, it was scripted out. Actors performed it with like, it was written, you know, like, it was a big budget movies like that. They're probably way more faker than anything we do in wrestling. Like, especially on this 100%. Indie level where it's like, you know, no one's ever handed me a script and been like, here, go out and say this. They've just been like, oh, we need you to cut a promo. These are sort of the, what we want you to talk about, you know? And then you got to go out and do it on your own, like off the top of your head, you know? Like, so it's like, in some ways, like, wrestling's more real, but like, just cause something's not like real and, you know, like I say, where, you know, to argue that wrestling's not real is absurd, because, like I say, it does, you know, physically is real. I can feel it. But, you know, to say that it's not a valid form of entertainment because it's fake is completely ridiculous, because, like, yeah, every single movie that you probably love is also fake, you know? And it's just a matter of whether or not you can, you know, suspend your reality and get into it and enjoy yourself, you know? And when that is firing on all cylinders for professional wrestling, I don't think there's anything better.
Oh, yeah. Well, you probably heard the saying, when wrestling is good, it's good. When it's bad, it's bad.
I got it. I don't know. There's sometimes when wrestling's bad where it's also fucking hell of an... It's very entertaining. I mean, there's times when it's bad that it's not entertaining, and it's usually like, you know, right after I come back from the curtain and realize I've had a bad match. That's not a fun time. But, you know, like, yeah, when wrestling is going and everything is going well, it can be super entertaining. But I mean, I'll also like fully admit, like, I've watched some bad matches that are very, very like fun to watch, you know. Probably been in a few bad matches like that too. So you never actually got around to wrestling yourself, even though you did. You say you trained for like a year, right?
Correct.
Which, I mean, I don't know what it was like back then, but nowadays that would be considered a very long time for you to be training without any kind of actual in-ring activity, you know?
Most definitely. And I know that may be a cause of concern for a lot of people saying, well, why did you train for so long with no matches? Well, the reason why is it was off and on training. I had a couple of concussions, so I had to take some time off.
Yeah.
I had the neck injury. I had some back injuries from security. So I'm like, it wasn't consistently like one full year. It was just from 2005 to 2006 I was training.
Gotcha.
However, Bad News and I were talking one training session, and he told me that he found that what was becoming a problem in the industry was people would train for 3 months and they would automatically be labeled professional wrestler and then go start doing shows.
Yeah.
And the problem with that was they weren't good quality shows and good quality matches that they were giving. So he's like, what was happening in his point of view was people were rushing the training so fast just to get to the live audience, so much so that they were giving lackluster performances and as a result affecting the overall image of the business.
Yeah. I mean, it does.
And I was like,
makes sense,
I get that.
For sure. Like,
I totally get it. So as a result of that conversation, I said, you know what? I'm like, maybe I'll train 9 to 12 months. He's like, please. He's like, do that. Train for 9 to 12 months and build that fundamentally muscle memory, just response and go out there and just do the best. And I was like, okay, that's what I'll do. So that's why I never had a match was I spoke the bad news. He made that great point. And I said, okay, I won't do it. And also I had so much anxiety and so much lack of confidence. I wasn't even near ready to even be in front of the crowd.
Yeah, like, I mean, that's definitely, like, stage fright can probably be an issue, but, like...
Oh, like, you know from experience yourself there, Goose, that the fans can be extremely, like,
yeah,
toxic.
Yeah, definitely, like, you can have some bad experiences in front of certain crowds, for sure. I honestly, like, I never feel like stage fright has really affected me in wrestling all that much. Like, you know what I mean by stage fright? Like, like, you do get nervous, of course, but, like, I've always felt, like, comfortable being in front of people and performing because, like, I did improv shows back in the day and stuff, right? So I was a performer before I was ever in wrestling. And then once I got into wrestling, I did the ring announcing and stuff. So it's like, it's not so the stage fright doesn't like make me super nervous. It's more so like if I have to try a new maneuver in the match for the first time or something like that, you know, like if I'm working with somebody I've never wrestled before, then I'm more nervous just about like, okay, how is this going to go? And like, is it going to be a safe night? You know, that sort of thing can make me nervous sometimes. More so than just being like, oh, there's people watching, you know?
Well, and like, not only on top of that, but I also had struggles with, will I get a concussion tonight?
Yeah.
Will I get hurt again? So like, when I got to that point, I started thinking to myself, like, maybe I should not do this anymore because that kind of thinking will get me hurt or at worst, I can hurt someone else.
Yeah, for sure. And then,
so it was a lot of self-awareness.
And like you say, it's one of those things like, I definitely wrestled before I was ready to, right? Like, you can tell, like, when you watch it and you're watching a match and somebody is, like, terrified, you know? It doesn't make for a good show.
No, because, like, you start hesitating, you start...
Yeah.
Not listening to, like, you go through what's called an adrenaline dump where you have tunnel vision and you can, you know, have loss of hearing and vision. So it's like, it's never a good sign if you are approaching, I know it's not called gorilla because it's another B, but if you're, you know, when you're approaching gorilla and you're like, oh my God, I am extremely nervous. It's like, you have to contain that. You have to calm down. because psychologically, if you are so nervous, you know, they say in psychology that if you tell yourself don't do something, you're gonna do it.
Yeah.
Because like it's the funniest thing when you tell people don't think about screwing up, because all that does is make them think about it more.
Yeah.
And it's just like it's so silly because you tell them just think about not thinking about it. What? Then I'm still thinking about it because I'm thinking about what I should not be thinking about to not think about. And it's such a roundabout that has so much psychological situations with it that it can be extremely just nuclear in the ring, where a person goes in a ring and they're extremely nervous, or they have bad ring rust and they get someone hurt, or they hurt themselves because of it. So when Bad News was giving me all that advice, I took it like a sponge. Was like, okay, he has a good point here. There is a lot of issues with this happening. And actually still before pre-COVID here, or before COVID, there was still a lot of that happening where kids would train for a month or two and all of a sudden they'd be booking shows and they're like, that was a terrible match. Well, obviously they only have 2 months of training, or even less than that. Like, so it's like, take your time and study the craft and just never have the mindset that you know everything, because you will never know everything. You're always learning. You're always growing. And that's why I never had a matches, was because it's just like, I took my time and I was like, I'm going to train. But then the concussion started happening, and then my back injuries. And I was like, okay, this is now making it even more longer for me, because I don't feel confident going into the ring right now in front of people and dealing with that nervousness on top of, oh my God, I now have 10 concussions or 11 concussions. And oh shit, I can get my 13th or 12th one now.
Yeah.
So it was probably for the best I never had a match, to be honest with you, because looking back 2020 now in hindsight, I was not near ready.
That's fair, man.
The training, concussions, they make you, or actually not even just concussions, but any good or bad injury you have can actually cause you a mindset shift where it's like, oh my God, I can get hurt again.
Yeah. So,
and that's when I realized leaving the industry and not partaking in it further was probably the best decision for me. Even though it hurt at the time to have to say I'm done, it was probably the best thing for me and for the industry that I was away.
And for your family. Like you said, you have a son, you know? Like,
correct. I have a son and a daughter now. So it's like,
yeah, you can't be
now
sitting around in a vegetative state, not taking care of your kids, because you want exactly, to get in and there and take some bumps.
Exactly. And that's why now I'm coaching with AWA. It's, my emphasis is 100% on safety and health. Like, it's just, you want to be able to be the best in the ring, but be the greatest outside of it for your family.
Yeah.
That's the end result I'm trying to push these kids towards, where it's like, don't make wrestling everything, because when you retire, I want you to be able to still have a life with your kids and your grandkids and so forth. Like,
100%. So I wanted to get into that, like, next with you, like your Alberta Wrestling Academy. I asked you at the beginning how you got involved, and you
sure did do that. And I just Donald Trumped you and didn't answer it, I guess.
Yeah, we went on like an hour long, or like a 45 minute history of your involvement, which is fine and totally what we're here to do. So, but you said it was because you've been friends with Otto, who is Vinny Fever, and he runs the Alberta Wrestling Academy. And at one point, was it that he decided to bring you on to the team and be one of the coaches?
Yeah, we were talking, and I brought to – well, he actually came to me and said, hey, Dave, I'm launching a new school in September, but then it got pushed to October because of COVID. And okay. I was like, okay. He's like, we're doing a grand opening on October 3rd, I believe it was. Can you show up? And I'm like, of course. So I showed up, and – before that grand opening, we decided, like, what can I do to help? And I was like, well, I've been working a lot with concussion experts, a lot with concussion doctors and psychologists. So I have a lot of concussion experience myself, and I've donated my brain to Concussion Legacy Foundation with Chris Nowinski. I didn't, you know, I gave them my permission to donate my brain to them for research, because – yeah, because the fact that I have ADHD and 15 concussions, that combination is very important to pay attention to. Oh, I also didn't mention that in November 2019, I saw my neurologist, and she told me that I'm showing early symptoms of CTE.
Oh, yeah, that's and, not good. So let's get get your brain in there and get it examined when, you know.
Yeah, what happened was I was experiencing a lot of symptoms with memory loss, a lot of symptoms with emotions, a lot of symptoms with dizziness. So I met up with her and she said, well, you have permanent PCS, which means that your symptoms are most likely going to get worse as you age, like dementia and situations like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, that's scary. Like hearing that as I get older, I could potentially get worse. Like that was something I did not want to hear. And then she said that they're finding that symptoms for CTE are most dominant at the beginning of 30 to the end of 39 is where they find the most symptoms are being shown. Obviously there's some anomalies like, the football player, I can't remember his name, Aaron Rodriguez, I think it was.
Don't ask
that
me.
Was diagnosed. Yeah. Only time I know, so I watched the documentary on Netflix where he had CTE at 27 years old, stage four, which is crazy in a concussion. And then Benoit.
Realized there was stages to it.
Yeah, there's four stages to CTE, and stage one is usually starting in the early signs of early beginnings of 30 years old, and that's why. It's been so dominant with me to bring my concussion story and my concussion awareness to AWA because I told the students, I was like, you do this because you love it, but you have a life that you still want to live beyond it. And it's just, it's so important. So when Otto heard about what I was doing with Dr. David Reese and Chris Nowinski and people like that, he's like, I want to bring that to the school because I think it's really important.
Yeah.
So I said, hell yeah, I'm in talks right now with some book projects and some speaking gigs, which were postponed because of COVID. But it's like I'm a huge networking member of Concussion Awareness Society, basically. So I was like, I can definitely bring you guys a lot of research, a lot of awareness, and a lot of education. But then we start talking further, and I was like, I also have 8 years of security defense, self-defense training, and martial arts training, so I can help with that regards. And then I helped with the social media. So it all started with concussion awareness and education. And then he realized I have a lot more other skills that I could apply to the school to make it differentiated towards other schools in the country. I told him, I was like, there's a lot of schools that are not focusing on concussion awareness and concussion training. They're not focused on...
Yeah, no, that's not...
On never, all...
I mean, we obviously are taught to protect ourselves in general, and like are you know encouraged to do moves in a way that isn't going to result in a concussion, but it's, you know, I've never had specific like concussion training or anything like that, you know.
Yeah, and that's what I'm building for the industry. Is I'm building a team of experts and doctors that are actually more experienced than me, and because what we're trying to do is we're trying to develop a strong focus on mental health. Because I hate to say it, but it's the truth. The wrestling industry right now has a lot of toxicity, a lot of drama, a lot of negativity still within it. A lot of just juvenile antics that are just making the focus no longer on mental health or the safety, but the tradition sense of how the wrestling industry used to be.
Yeah.
And we're trying to make a change in it because it's 2020 now, people. Like, we've had 7 wrestlers pass away that were diagnosed with CTE.
And I mean, that makes sense. There's a lot of wrestlers, like, for sure. Wrestling is like a performance, and there's a lot of egos, and so like it makes sense that it would be, you know, dramatic in nature, and it does extend. Like sometimes people do, like, you know, they can't draw the line between reality and fiction, so like the drama can spill over and become like more dramatic than it should be. You know what I mean? And then there's also the fact that, like we've talked about before, wrestling hurts a lot, so like. If you're in your, like, right mind, it's probably not a thing you would ever want to, you know, like, you got to be kind of nuts to want to be a wrestler. You know what I'm saying?
Sad but true.
Yeah.
It's definitely a decision that you have to think, okay, long term, this could change my life forever in a negative sense. And it's a huge risk. And that's why I tell the kids, and like, when you have children and you have that family that you start to create and you start to have, your priorities will have to change because it's just long term, that's the focus. And I know people who start wrestling that they're focused on the now and the next championship. It's like you got to focus beyond that. They're like, okay, am I going to do this spot that has a severe, because you know how it is. You get into that ring, that itself is taking a risk. But then you start doing all these crazy Canadian destroyers and all these table spots and chair spots, and it's like, is it really beneficial for you long term? Like, let's look at the history here. But Chris Benoit, Axel Rotten, Balls Mahoney, Jimmy Snuka, Test Andrew Martin, Mr. Fuji, they've all been diagnosed with CTE. And when you look at their careers and all the chair shots that they were taking, the table spots, it's like those contributed to what happened to them later on in life. And so when I'm training or coaching at AWA, it's focused on like 1930s to 1960s catch wrestling, where it's like, I want you guys to focus on storytelling, facial expressions, and just spots that make sense, that tell a story, but it also keeps you guys safe. And it's just, it's such a, like, watching current wrestling nowadays, even during COVID. And for example, 2 weeks ago on Raw, Jeff Hardy hit a swanton from the top rope to a table outside, and he smoked his head on the steps.
I saw that. It was ugly.
And I'm like, really? And then people are like, oh, Dave, it's Jeff Hardy. I'm like, see, I don't see Jeff Hardy as WWE superstar. I see Jeff Hardy now as a father and a husband. And I know it may sound corny because it's so anti-wrestling to think of this way, but I'm just like, dude, that spot made no sense. Like, you put your life on the line for A, there's no fans present. Like,
yeah,
they're on computer screens, so there's no pop. I was like, B, it's like, that could have been done so differently. Like, why was
the you table could have moved that table steps? Like, yeah, right? 3 feet to the left, and it would have been fine. Well, I mean, as fine as jumping off the top rope, doing a flip, landing on a guy and breaking a table can be. But, you know, like, yeah, 100%. It was all like, why would he do that with those steps there even, you know? And then if you are, then why aren't you going out way further to make sure that, you know, you don't smoke your head on the steps? But
it's just like, it gets you thinking, like, think about Axel Rotten and Boz Mahoney and all those chair shots they took in the past.
Yeah.
And even like Randy Orton, like I remember Mick Foley, like Mick Foley's donated his brain to CLF. Mark Henry has donated his brain, and so has Jeff Hardy, because they know, like, hey, we have lots of concussions because all the chair shots. And like you probably saw that match between Mankind and The Rock at Royal Rumble for the last minute.
Yeah, last minute. Like 15 times or something, 13, yes. 15 times.
And I'm just sitting there, I'm like, guys, knowing what we do now in 2020, let's avoid making those same mistakes today. So I'm glad that they banned chair shots to the head.
Yeah.
I'm glad they did that.
I got hit in the head with a chair once, and it was terrible. It was
not fun.
No, it was really awful. And, like, you know, you're bleeding, and then you're kind of fuzzy and foggy and stuff. And, you know, you just kind of feel aloof. That's how it sort of was for me. I mean, I don't know if I was concussed or not, but, you know, it was one of those things and whatnot. And it was very much so then, like, if anyone ever was like, okay, and then I'm going to hit you with a chair in the face or in the head, and I'd just be like, yeah, no, let's avoid that and not do it that way. You know, we just don't need to.
It's not, well, and I can
like stab a guy in the gut with the chair and then hit him over the back. You know, you don't have to hit him in the face.
But...
yeah, yeah. Oh, it hurts. honestly, like in that same match where I got hit in the head, I got hit in the back too. And the shot to the back hurt more. But the shot to the head was the one that was like, you know, concerning. But it was just like, yeah, like just don't hit people in the head. And like, yeah, no, it's not a good idea for sure.
I honestly don't find entertainment with it no more. Like when I see chair shots to the head, I'm like, that doesn't entertain me. Or when I see chair table spots where the guy hits the head in the steps, it's like, I'm not entertained by this. Because knowing what we do now about concussions and CTE, it's like, I don't want to see Jeff Hardy, 51 years old, having a CTE episode.
Yeah.
Based on what we saw 10 years before, and we're like, oh, that was amazing. It's like fans have to understand that they're part of the problem to why wrestling has increased to how hardcore it is now, because they just wanted more blood and more violence.
Yeah.
Because they got so addicted to it. It's like, guys, they're entertainers, yes, but they're also fathers and wives and husbands. And it's like, So you asked me what my podcast were. The podcast that I'm launching next month is called Body Slam on Mental Health.
Okay.
And what I'm doing is I'm inviting individuals who are part of the wrestling industry currently, aspiring to be, or in the past, like legends and Hall of Famers.
All right.
And what they're doing is I'm not inviting them as a gimmick or a character, but as themselves saying, you know, how has mental health affected you in professional wrestling, or how has concussions helped you, or sorry, not helped you, but benefited you, or hurt you, or harmed you, or how are you doing with it now? And
yeah,
it's all about mental health, because a lot of these Hall of Famers, that's what, like, I'm talking to Bushwhacker Luke, and he's coming onto my podcast, and he's like, looking back now, there's not really much focus on mental health and wrestling. It's go out there, do the show, and whatever happens, happens. And it's like, he's like, that's not healthy no more. I was like, people are waking up realizing, like, they're realizing wrestling in itself is dangerous, but now you have all the head concussions and mental health issues and emotional abuse. Like, there's a lot of coaching that's happening right now throughout the industry where it's very counterproductive and very unhealthy.
Yeah.
Very, like, oh, and it's being hidden as traditional training. It's time to move on, because traditional training also led to a lot of internal demons and battles for superstars with the wrestling, you know, with wrestling with alcohol abuse and drug abuse. It's because mental health is everything. So the podcast is driven towards bringing awareness and an education to how mental health is not being taken care of in wrestling. And as a result, a lot of wrestlers are battling with suicidal ideation, concussions, and anxiety and depression and stress.
Well,
and we're trying to figure out how we could change that, where the backstage environment is more so supportive of you than it is against you, saying, well, your match was terrible, you suck, you're terrible, get out of the ring, you don't belong, and all the backstage arguments. And it's like, okay, we have to change the industry as a whole to where we're not adding more damage than is already happening in the ring.
Yeah. And I mean, it's that's the hard line to stand on, because, like, I've been there. I've had people say those things to me, right? Like, you're terrible and you don't belong. And it does. It sucks. And it's like, I mean, it's kind of motivating, though, because, you know, you also have other people that are like, no, stick with it and keep going and work hard and do your best. And, you know, like, it's just one of those things. Like, I can appreciate, and I always tell people, like, I need to know what I did wrong, you know? So, like, and you do have to be able to hear, accept, and acknowledge and address criticism, right? Because, like, that's what you need to do, is address it. But, like, if you don't, like, even listen to it, then you can't. But there's also, like, a tactful way about going about giving somebody, like, pointers and stuff. And I really can't comment on that, because I'm not experienced enough in the business that I would ever do that. You know, I wouldn't pull someone aside and try to tell them how to wrestle or anything. You know, like, I may give them a tips if I saw something weird and was like, oh, maybe if you know, tucked your chin a little earlier, you know, maybe that was what I do or whatever. But, like, I would never sit down and be like, oh, you need to wrestle like this and yada yada yada, you know. I'm just saying, like, you need to know what you did wrong, but also, like, yeah, guys just hollering and shouting at people and stuff and making them, cutting them down, that's not, like, it's going to be way better if we all try and build ourselves up, you know?
Yeah, like when I was trying to bad news, the one thing he said to me that really resonated was, don't get yourself over, get the match over. And then as a result of that, you'll get the pay-per-view event over, or you'll get the brand over, and you'll get the boys and the girls over. He's like, it's a team. He's like, it's meant to be a team experience. However, with all the politics and the drive and the egos, he's like, it becomes an individualistic focus, and that's where everything gets all screwed up. And that's why I tell people all the time, I'm like, there's criticism, and then there's constructive criticism, where I'm giving you criticism in the event that I want to inspire you to get better. But if I'm just going to sit here and yell at you and belittle you and judge you, it's going to create a mental response of, I suck. And then you're going to take that drama home with you.
Oh, I'm fully aware.
Right? So it's like, that's what we're trying to develop, and we're trying to bring awareness to, where it's like, guys, there's coaching and there's just being an ass.
Yeah.
There's coaching, and then there's just being a jerk that is angry at the industry that didn't make it and is taking it out on the kids now. So it's like we're trying to bring awareness to mental health care, saying we don't want these professional wrestlers in their 40s dying of suicide or hurting other people because of CTE and concussions and mental health issues. And that's why we're building this huge team with myself and Dr. David Reese, who is a 30-year psychologist who has worked with WWE, Ring of Honor, TNA, Impact, NHL, NFL.
Yeah, so like does, we have a... is he involved in the AWA then?
No, he not officially, but we're talking about bringing him in for some seminars.
Okay.
To teach about psychology and psychiatry and concussion awareness and signs and symptoms and just basically updating all the data that's been found. Like, all the research that's been done in our concussions is quite alarming.
Yeah.
With what they're finding in regards to permanent, long-term side effects and risk. And it's scary. Like, when you see all the research, you're like, holy cow, this is scary. And that's why WWE and, well, I shouldn't say AEW, because AEW didn't have a ban on chair shots until Cody Rhodes had a chair shot to the head that looked really bad.
Yeah.
And then they're like, talking
about that recently on an interview.
They're like, we should probably ban chair shots to them. Like, you think? like, why do you have to have social outcry to ban something? And then Matt Hardy was having a match with Sammy Guevara, and they're on top of a forklift, and the spot was to go through two tables, but Matt Hardy cleared both tables and smoked his head in the concrete.
Oh, no.
And he was knocked out for a good 30 to 40 seconds, and then the match continued, and I was like, what the hell? And the doctor was like, well, he said he was clear. I'm like, I don't care if he said it's clear. I just said one of the symptoms of concussions is you are delusional. You should not be trusted to make a decision saying you're good. Because, like, it's just, like, it's well known now that you can suffer a concussion and there's, like, and people have to understand, like, there's a lot of myths about concussions, too. Like, you can't have a concussion unless you are unconscious. That's not true. Only 10% of concussions are reported involve being unconscious. So there's a lot of myths that have to be corrected. Like, for example, concussion symptoms could not be instant. You know, they can show days later, weeks later.
This is interesting. I'm sorry to interrupt. You have had 15 concussions. I'm not sure if I've ever had one or not. You know, like I say, maybe when I got hit with that chair. But like, if it did, it was minor. But like, can you explain what happens? How does it feel?
So it's different for everybody, but the what concussion basically means is it's enough force created that sends your brain to hit the skull. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that, it can cause internal bleeding. It can cause instant symptoms like dilated pupils, vomiting, dizziness, headaches. The most common that are severe, like if you have small symptoms, you do not have to go to the emergency room. However, if you have symptoms of vomiting, nose bleeding, severe headaches, dizziness, it's highly suggested you go to the hospital right away. No, like, I'll see how I feel tomorrow. It's like, no, go right away, because it could be very serious or it can be very minor, but you want to go get it checked out. With my concussions, because of all the research at that time, they were all severe, but they were treated minorly. Had I had better response from it, I probably could have prevented at least 80% of my concussions.
Yeah.
But well, like you because said, you like there was no education. Like, my doctor's like, you're fine, just take some Advil. I'm like, doctor, I'm hallucinating. I'm seeing things. I'm having dreams of killing myself. And he's like, it's okay, this is normal. I'm like, this is normal? What? So, and then 2011 was when they're like, yeah, we have a lot of research now. And they put you in risk a lot of times. Yeah. Like, every concussion I had was a risky concussion because I was ignoring. Like, there was one time there, Goose, where I had my head in the freezer and I just stood there. And my ex was like, what are you doing? I was like, I don't know. I don't know why I'm having my head in the freezer right now. I'm just standing here. I don't know what's going on. I don't know who I am. And it was very scary being someone that I did not know who I was.
Yeah.
And then when the whole, like I said, when the whole Benoit thing happened, I understood everything. Because it's like, this is what I'm showing. And his brain was comparable to an 80-year-old man with dementia.
Yeah.
Because of all concussions. And so, like, nowadays, I had a wrestler, a student of mine, say, hey, this student potentially suffered a concussion at the wrestling show. This is what happened. And I was like, he had lost vision? That's not good. So I contacted the kid. I was like, listen, man, if you had lost vision, that's a sign. Like, you got to get checked out. And he's like, oh, but I don't want to miss the show next week. Or I'm like, I don't care. Like, none of that matters to me right now.
Yeah.
Because long term, I've told you guys, long term is the goal here. I want you guys to be healthy and be able to live your dream. And right now, you potentially suffered a severe concussion. And you need to take care of that. And he's like, okay, I'll go take care of it. I'm like, thank you. I was like, I have to be here for you to remind you, because I understand adrenaline rush and I understand passion and I understand pride. But pride can kill you.
He's okay now, eh?
He went and got evaluated. He's all good. Okay. So that's what I do with AWA, is they have questions about concussions. They come to me. If I don't know the answer, I send them to my contacts and my team, basically, and they get the answer for them. So it's really good to have, because concussions can happen at, like, I don't know if you know this, Kyle, but research has also shown that you don't have to get hit in the head of a concussion no more.
Yeah.
Because now there's a thing called shock impact. So if you get hit hard enough in the lower back, it can actually cause a shock to go up to your brain.
Jeez.
And that shock can give you a concussion. So let's say you take a back body drop. Actually, that's a bad example. Let's say you take an atomic drop and you get stiffed on it and the guy actually nails you in the tailbone and you get shocked from the tailbone upwards, it could give you a concussion.
Damn.
Like, it's, the research is so intense right now. And that's why the wrestling industry is paying so much attention to CTEs and concussion now, because the data is always changing. Like, before it was like, oh, you hit a head, you can get concussion. Oh, now, because of shock syndrome and shock impact, if I get hit hard enough in the lower back or the knees and it goes upwards, I can get concussion from that too. So it's like, now you can go from having a stinger to, well, is it a stinger or is it a concussion now?
Yeah.
Like, so there's so much data out. And, like, another thing that's really important that I had with me that I could have died from, which I'm so glad I didn't, obviously, but it's called second impact syndrome. So what that means is, if you have a concussion that does not heal properly and you sustain another concussion too soon, it can actually kill you instantly.
Jeez. Didn't you tell me had two concussions in the same day?
I did. Yeah. I did. Like, my two concussions from the heart attack and the DET were literally 3 minutes apart.
Oh, boy.
And so what happens with second impact syndrome is it causes internal bleeding. So the first case was a girl playing rugby. She suffered a concussion. She took 7 days off and she thought, hey, I'm healed now. I feel better. Mm-hmm. She played the second game in rugby. She got hit in the head. She died on the field.
Oh, my God.
And they're like, even though she felt good, the brain still showed it wasn't fully healed yet from the first concussion. So when she suffered the second one, it killed her instantly. And it's like, and I told, Dr. David Reese, and I was like, guys, we got to take this more seriously. We got to put the industry second and people's health first and realize that if you have a concussion, you need time off, not you should. You're going to take time off. And this goes for any promotions. And like, it's not like we're trying to create a union. It's more so like every promotion will have someone who's trained on concussion awareness, not concussion diagnosis, but a concussion awareness saying, hey, that bump looked really bad. Let's pull you to the side here and we'll put you through a checklist. If you have these symptoms, we'll send you to the hospital.
Yeah.
Like that's where it's getting. Cause it's like, let's say you had that chair shot, which you did. And let's say that we had a concussion awareness guy there. He'd say, hey, how do you feel? Do you see this? Do you feel this? And you say, yes, I feel that. Or yes, I feel this. Mm-hmm. Okay. You're going to the hospital. Like, you need that now.
Yeah.
Because I've heard of a lot of bad bumps on, NRCW and PWA and CWE, where they're like, oh yeah, they had a bad bump and they're a little bit, buzzed and they felt dizzy, but they were fine. And it's like, who are you to say that?
Yeah.
You don't know that. Like, there could be a prolonged problem there. I don't know if you know about the hockey player that died recently that was 25 years old and he died of internal bleeding in the brain.
Jeez.
He said he had headaches. He said he had headaches. He had a concussion.
Yeah.
And he was just dealing with small headaches. And the wife's like, yeah, he has some headaches. But then all of a sudden, within a week or two, he was in a coma and then he died.
Oh, my Lord.
And it's all because of a concussion, because he had headaches and he didn't report the headaches and they ignored it. and then he passed away. There was also a boxer. Now, do you know why boxing went from 12 rounds down to 10?
No, I don't.
The reason why, they found that concussions were happening mostly in the 12th round. So they found out that the longer the fight, the more increase there was of concussions. So that's why they lowered down to 10 rounds, because they found that 10 rounds and under had the least percentage of concussions.
Oh,
and I was like, okay.
I mean,
it
does
so
make
now...
sense. I mean, it is a sport where you just basically try and punch another person right? in the face, right? Like,
so it's like they're trying
a
to
lot
figure
of concussions occur.
Like, they're trying to figure out all these ways to allow the sport to be very physical, but less risky of concussions. And I'm like, guys, you can't do that. Like, they're trying to create a new helmet for football that prevents concussions, and this guy, this one doctor, is like, that's not possible. And I don't know if you knew this or not, but professional wrestling, they're saying that taking a slam or taking a bump is comparable to a car accident going 35 miles per hour.
Yeah, I have heard
so
that.
It's like you're putting your body through hell, so let's help you not only have a longer career, because it's what you love to do and I want to support that, but let's have it where you can be healthy while you're doing it.
Yeah.
And that's what Biaslam on Mental Health is focusing on. Biaslam Mental Health is a podcast right now, but I have a lot of plans for it in the future to be bigger than that. And it's all because I want to be able to help guys like you and guys, the students and the girls. Just like, listen, I want to help you guys live your passion for as long as you can. But my passion is making sure that when you retire, your family gets the best of you.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm doing right now. I can't wrestle no more. So right now it's not about me. It's about helping you guys stay safe. And that's what I'm doing.
Is there any performance aspect of wrestling that you would like to undertake if you got the opportunity? Like, obviously, like, it's not safe for you to bump, but, like, would you like to try your hand at perhaps refereeing or ring announcing or being somebody's manager or some kind of a role like that on a show?
It's funny that you asked me that, because Kenny recently asked me to manage him and Rivers because they're bringing back USA Express. With RCW.
Oh, really?
And I was like, oh, I would love to do that. But this was before I had the closure, right? This is before I said, you know what? I accept I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
I accept it. I acknowledge it. I'm good with it. Now that I'm actually in that mindset of I can go in the ring and not feel that pressure of I want to bump, I was like, I will do it. If it's to help the brand, if it's to help the superstar or the wrestlers involved, if it's going to help the business as a whole, I'll do it.
Yeah.
So it's definitely something that Squiggy has talked to me about. And I was like, I would love to help out. Bruce is talking about helping him book and helping him, like, figure out ways to build the industry up. Because right now, with COVID going on, it's the best opportunity for brands to be like, listen, what can we change? What can we work on? And what can we do to make this industry better, safer, and just more entertaining?
Yeah.
But not more barbaric, right?
100%. I mean... like, it is about longevity, and, like, you got to be smart about the risks you take. I mean, it is wrestling, so there's always going to be risks, but, you know, just be smart about it. Dave, we're running out of time here.
Are we? Aww.
Yeah, Chris, it is, as we're recording this, it's probably, about a week before Christmas or whatnot, and so this time of year is particularly hard for those struggling with depression and whatnot. So I just wanted to find out from you, what are the things that you do to motivate yourself when you find yourself depressed and down?
So like I said at the beginning, I suffer with what's called dysthymia, which is prolonged permanent depression,
mm-hmm.
which means every single day I'm faced with that possibility of falling into it, and especially during COVID. Like, I know Christmas time itself is very stressful, but now on top of all these restrictions and lockdowns, it's even more stressful and more scary. So the only thing that I can say is give yourself a fighting chance by committing to the behaviors and the strategies that you have to help you through. So what I do is I use cold shower therapy. I use meditation twice a day. I exercise or train for 3 minutes a day. I read every single day. I do what I can to make me feel like I have purpose and would drive. Because one of the main reasons people fall in depression is they lose focus on their purpose. So just align with passion, do what you love, do as much as you want. If you want to play video games all day, play video games all day. I don't care. Just do what you love and just keep yourself in that mindset that you have value and you have worth. Because right now, a lot of people are struggling with the fact that they feel there's no worth anymore, no value, but that's so not true. In my moments,
when I was struggling at my worst with my like mental health issues, my biggest problem was just this constant overwhelming feeling of inadequacy. But maybe you'll have to come on your mental health podcast to talk about that, because this is Monday Night Shaw, a wrestling show. So like you say, so stick to your strategies, stick to the plans that you've outlined. Anything else? Any other things that can help people avoid getting too depressed and down?
You're just understanding that you're not alone. You're not alone. Like, I'm all over social media. I'm on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook. I'm always within reach. I'm always within a message. So, the greatest system that I had for me was support, and that's what I want to give back to the people: is you're not alone. There's always someone else that's going through it with you or has gone through it.
100%, and I think that's. Yeah, so that's very important. And like, if your buddy's with anyone, you know, give them a call once in a while just to say hi.
That kind of stuff. Just a simple check-in.
Yeah, that sort of stuff, for sure. Dave, I want to thank you for coming on the show. Very much appreciate it. It was good chatting with you. Getting to know you a little bit. I met you at the Workhorse Fitness Center, which is another wrestling school in Calgary that we didn't end up talking about, but we're gonna wrap it up here. Can you drop your social media plugs and give us a plug on your podcast one more time? Let us know where we can find you.
Most definitely. So Square Circle Rewind podcast is available on Spotify and several other platforms, minus Apple. Don't know why, but you can find us there. We stream every Monday. The episodes premiere every Tuesday. Body Slam is premiering in the middle of January. My first guest is most likely going to be Tyson Dukes, so that's very exciting for that.
Oh, awesome. And I've been watching his videos on YouTube, 61 and 61. Oh, so good.
Yep, great guy. Great friend of mine. Great guy. So I'm going to have him on just to talk about his concussion that he had a while ago. He was knocked out for 40 minutes, so a lot of good content to come there. For me personally, Dave Matthew Body, BODDY, I'm everywhere on social media.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I like your Facebook, because there's always, like, constantly, almost every day, just, like, motivational, like, write-ups and stuff. Like, just shit that you read that makes you feel good.
Well, I appreciate that. I hope you find value with it.
I certainly do, man. Thanks again for coming on the show. Thanks for all your help. In the community and raising awareness and whatnot, I think it's an extremely undervalued thing. So that's why I wanted to kind of put a spotlight on you here today. And so I wanted to thank you one more time, and hopefully sooner or later we'll see you out there managing Kenny and Steve Rivers. Nova Scotia and New Brunswick, Quebec.